Hi, this is Ash with Wizards Respite. You're watching the Wizards Respite Sanctorum, where we do a deep dive into all things CTRPG. This week, we're going to be doing another journaling game. But before we get into that, I am, as always, joined with by my co-host, Zachariah. Zachariah, how are you doing?
Hi. If this feels like we did this once already, we did, because I'm bad at my job. And I'm just every day hopeful that Wiz does not realize that I am as bad at my job as I actually am. And find another person to do it.
Zachariah forgot to hit record the first time around. And him being bad at his job makes me better at my job, because I get to practice. I get a run through real quick.
Yeah. There you go. You get a try number one, I guess.
That's right.
Yes. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me, and thank you for continuing to put up with my mistakes.
Are you ready for today's show, Zach?
Yeah. What are we doing today, man? I'm excited.
We're deep diving into a 1,000-year-old vampire.
Yes.
I got it right this time.
Yeah, you did.
Last week, I screwed it up. I was really tired at the end of the show when I was promoting this one, but where it's a 1,000-year-old vampire that we're going to be diving into, a TTRPG journaling game, kind of like the last tea shop of what we've done before.
So, not to retread again what I said that no one else heard, but one of the things that I love about these journaling games and the TTRPG corner of X, formerly known as Twitter, is the fact that, like, I discover journaling games and the amount of procedural generation in RPGs, like TTRPGs. We do TTRPG stuff on my YouTube channel, obviously, because this is where the source of this comes from. However, we also do a lot of video game stuff. We started as primarily a video game channel. So if you don't know me from there, you wouldn't know that procedural generation is the thing that gets me out of the bed in the morning for video games. I'm super excited about it. It just makes me so happy. It is something that can contribute to the uniqueness and replayability of a game, and I think in this kind of thing, the minute somebody says procedural generation, I'm interested. I want to see what's going on with it. And I had never really considered it in the TTRPG space. Now that I have met Wiz, I met Springleaf Villager, and played Last Tea Shop, it kind of opened my eyes, so much so that I made my own. That you can find on DriveThruGames, Stealth Plug, Getting Over, Wrestling One. And I think that they're just so absolutely cool. So this is right up my alley, and I actually did not add this last time, but currently one of my main private games that I play just for fun, TTRPG-wise, is World of Darkness, which I've never really jumped into. So the vampire thing is actually more interesting to me right now, because I've never really, like, gotten into that, and I am recently. I'm not playing a vampire, but I am making a vampire character as a backup for the inevitability of my character's death. So I think that it's just really cool. I'm really excited about this, to hear about this system and everything. I think this is, like, what, the third journaling game we've done on here?
Yeah, or at least a third procedural generated. Is it third? Yeah, I think it is the third one, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And these types of games are gaining a lot in popularity. I'm hearing more and more about them across the sort of TTRPG internet sphere as a whole. The community seems to be really picking up on these things and really liking them a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to be seeing more of them in the future, and I think they're going to be gaining, like, a lot of recognition in and of themselves as a subgenre.
Yeah. I think that, like they're also usually very cheap. And very fun solo experiences. In a lot of ways, I find them more worth it money-wise than actual TTRPGs. And don't get me wrong, everybody out there, before you get the pitchforks. What I'm saying is, like, with a TTRPG, you have to have a group of people to play it, period. Like, in most cases, especially the ones that you're paying $60 for, you know? Whereas, a solo RPG, you can purchase it for usually $5 to $10. You bring it home, you sit down, you get yourself a drink, and you just have a nice time with yourself. That sounded oddly sexual, but I didn't mean it to. That's not what I meant.
There's a journaling game of all kinds.
Oh man! Oh, we need to do some. We need to do some research on that. On
I'm sure.
Maybe that's the untapped thing that I need to hit. Now we're only doing porno journaling games.
Oh god. Oh, this whole channel is gonna take a real wild turn real quick.
It's gonna get real weird. It's gonna get real weird. Yeah, I think also something that's very interesting, and to get away from the idea of porno games, is, and I'm not trying to make a broad generalization here, but a good amount of role-playing gamers, like our peers, are relatively introverts. They're usually, I mean, at least from my time, I know that it's much more, gained much more a widespread acclaim right now, but as a 41-year-old dude who played it when people thought you were worshiping the devil,
yeah, right.
most of the people who played it back then were kind of like socially awkward and kind of a little bit more introverted. I think the world has gotten a lot better at understanding introverts versus extroverts and social right. awkwardness and stuff. I definitely feel like it's a much more welcoming and inviting place to people like that. But those people would love to play. If I wish I had had these games when I was a kid and I didn't want to talk to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I think that would have been absolutely awesome. And it kind of surprises me that it took this long for a basically an area that was mostly dominated by introverts to make a game that was just solo for people to play by themselves, you know?
I can definitely see that. And sort of stacking upon that sort of train of thought a little bit, another thing that actually also kind of surprised me why it's taken this long for these things to really, like, become a thing and become popular and then really getting some recognition. You know, a lot of people that are picking up TTRPGs in general, people probably watching this show, they're probably GMs. They're probably DMs. Yeah. They like world building. They like writing. They like doing all of this stuff. And these journaling games are about writing.
Yeah.
And if you're a homebrewing GM, I mean, you're going to love this because you write. That's what you like doing. You like making worlds. And these games give you systems and inspiration and prompts to help your imagination create something. And it's just right up your alley.
Yeah, you know, I've said it once. I will say it 1,000 times. As much as I hate this statement, being a game master is not rock and roll. It's jazz, okay? It's all about improv. It is not about the notes that you see on the paper. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
even with the Turtles game that we're running right now, which you guys can watch on this channel, stealth plug. I'm running that out of a book, and I think probably 70% of the time I'm making shit up still on the spot to react to things that are happening with the players. Game mastering is all improv, and I think these games are like a tutorial for game mastering. If you want to be a better game master, if you want to be a better player, I think picking one of these up and playing through them at least once will do you good. Because it really teaches you to put yourself in different mindsets. It teaches you to put yourself in other people's shoes. And really, that's the core of role-playing, is to pretend. We're playing pretend. We're pretending to be somebody else, but we're doing it with rules. And I think that, like, that's the core of it. These journaling games just capture that so well, you know? Especially when the only person there to entertain you is you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, just gives you something to kind of build off of. And like you said, like, entertain yourself and improv. And gives you that just little bit of a spark to get your fire going. Your writing fire going.
Yeah. We got to talk about the game itself, though.
Yeah, why don't we jump into what makes this particular game tick. So, Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. It is, let me double check it, it's 186 pages.
Wow, that's big for a journaling game.
It is, and before anybody gets a little overwhelmed by that, because I know if you've already played journaling games, that sounds like a lot. Even if you haven't played journaling games, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
It's the way that they've organized it is part of the reason why it's so big. There are pictures in here. The prompts, there are three. There's a set of prompts, a whole section of it. Most of those prompts only have three prompts, about a sentence or two. They're just in really big print, though. And they're very stylized. They look really, like, interesting. But it kind of spreads out all of the content and makes it easy to read at a glance.
Oh, okay.
And so that huge girth of page count isn't, like, just solid blocks of text. You're not reading a book here.
It's more like a formatting thing.
Yeah, it is. A lot of it is. And it's clever formatting. But you also, a huge chunk of that is your writing prompts. So again, you're not reading constantly this whole thing. Once you get down past the rules, setting up the vampire that you're going to be playing and all of that, you start rolling to find your dice. And so, like I said, a huge chunk of those pages are just prompts going back and forth. And you're going to be jumping all over the place.
It's almost like Four Against Darkness. Like the book itself is something like 100 pages, but I think only like 20 of it is rules, and the rest of it is just like, if you encounter treasure, roll on this chart.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly like that. And so to for as far as rules are concerned, again, looking, it's about 30-ish pages of rules. Again, formatting is set up so that it's sort of spread out a little bit. They have pictures. They have this sort of almost collage thing going on with the formatting so that you have all these images from around the world as if they were collected by somebody who's lived through the ages, which is a nice flair. But what it has you do at the beginning is set up your vampire, like create your vampire's sort of backstory. They say there's two ways of playing it. A real quick play, which takes not that very much time, maybe like anywhere between an hour to 4 hours, or a little bit more of an in-depth play. And the whole goal of this game is sort of just writing out and discovering your vampire's memories as he travels through time. Okay. And so the different styles is how much energy you want to put into each one of these memories. Do you want a brief sentence, or do you want a big scene, like a paragraph? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think that sounds really cool. Is the bulk of the game just figuring out who he's been, or what? Like, what is the, what's the, is there like a goal, or like...
So be prepared. It's okay. a little sad, a little dramatic, and like and you're
we
gonna be.
We ran T shop. It's always a little sad, a little dramatic.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. So what it is not so much that he's discovering is memories. It's more as you start off with your character as a human. That's your very first memory, and then he gets turned right away. Right, he turns into a vampire. Then you travel down history through these prompts that will, some of them will be, some event happens right then, right after you got turned. Some of them will be, you went into, you know, a castle and slept for 100 years. And then you wake up, you know, and then you have a new set of issues that you have to deal with. So as you move through that, you're gaining more memories, you're writing more things. But you're only allowed to have 5 memories. So once you've filled up all 5 of these memories, you start forgetting things. And you as a game master, as the storyteller, have to decide what memories your vampire forgets and how that affects them. Because maybe they created a mortal enemy at one point, but they forgot that. Oh, wow. And then this character comes back to interact with your vampire, but he has no idea why this person wants to kill him so badly, why there's so much hatred there or whatnot.
Nice.
Now, each one of these memories are comprised of three events. Three events per memory. So that comprises like three prompts. So every time you roll, it gives you a prompt for an event, and that's how you start linking them together. So if you have a prompt that talks about a romance, right? You put that in one memory. Then you have a prompt that says something about an enemy. You put that in another memory. And then later you come up with another prompt that has something to do with a lost romance. Or romance was in one memory and one prompt. So now you can put that instance, that moment in with that other memory. And you start creating a chain of events that way.
Hmm.
By just jumping all over the place and then start scooting them together.
That's incredibly interesting. I love the mechanic of that. So you kind of almost play through, character creation to then play through the rest of the game.
Kind of. When you start off the character creation process, you create your moment of who you were before.
Right.
You became a vampire. You will create an immortal. There's a whole nother like little set of rules for immortals you encounter, and that immortal turns you into a vampire. You also create what is basically a resource in this game, which is literally called resources and skills. And as you travel through the various prompts, those resources are going to be called upon, or those skills are going to be called upon. Every time you use a resource or a skill, the skills particularly go away after they're used. The resources may stick around, may not, depending on the prompt that you get. So a resource could be like a tool or something that you have. That might disappear. A stationary resource could be your haunted castle that you acquire somehow. And that will stick around until you run into a prompt that says, your dwelling has been destroyed by mortals, you know, and it goes all over the place. The thing I really love about all of this is they give you all of these basically blocks of things that you'd have to do and resources that you have, but they completely leave it up to you as to what those resources are. They never tell you you have, you know, a sword. They tell you you have maybe a weapon, and you can decide what that weapon's going to be, where it came from, why, you know?
That's really the essence of the journaling games that I've seen so far that are cool, is when basically what it's trying to do is stimulate your ability to tell the story, not so much like tell it for you, you know what I mean? And I think that's really cool. That's a really cool essence. So you do all these memories. You get all these resources and whatnot. What happens once you get to that, to the 1,000 years?
So as you go through it, there are two ways that this whole process could. There's a few ways that this process could end. If you run out of skills and resources, that acts as both kind of your tools to interact with the world, but also your almost in a sense your HP. Because if you don't have any more tools and you don't have any more resources, if you don't have any more skills and you don't have any more resources, the game ends and you find that last prompt, that last challenge that requires you to use a resource, you have to write as your death. You know? So if you're out of skills,
you could die in your any situation, really.
You could.
Wow, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
And that's going to push your skills as a writer, because you don't know what your resource is. You just came up with these resources as they were unfolding in the gameplay.
Yeah.
And now it's your last one, and it's the reason why you die. Losing it is the reason why you die.
That's amazing. So I love that it really gamifies the character creation part of things before then, like, moving into the game itself. Like, I almost feel like that's the first half, which is kind of really cool in my opinion. I think like coming up with the memories is half the game almost, you know.
It actually is. When I started this game, I'm still in the process of playing it because I'm doing the long form, and that can take like weeks to get through. But the single, like, longest session that I had so far is just character creation. Because, yeah, you just get so into it, and you have, like, four memories in character creation that you start off with. Remember, you have four, they're asking you to start off with.
Right.
And each memory contains three moments, or what do they call them? Not instances, but like moments in time that you slot into those memories. And there's a system where you have to create that moment in time with one of your other character traits, like your skill, a person you knew. It also asks you to create characters for your beginning, as well as a resource. And so you have to pick one of those, two of those things, and slot that into your memory. And so that's when you really get creative. Like, where did my guy come from? What was he doing? Who did he know?
Yeah.
How did he become a vampire? You know, how did this involve his skills? How did him becoming a person in the world happen? And how did he get these resources? And yeah, just get your brain cooking.
Yeah, it really does. I love the memory forgetting thing. Like your brain can only hold so many like thoughts before you're out of space and you have to dump something, and that could be the most important thing. What's the mechanic for if you lose a memory, like you had said, like, oh, I'm gonna pick this memory to not remember anymore. How could it possibly come back? Like, what's the mechanic involved on that coming back to hit you?
So, how that works is, like, you have the five memories, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you come to your next prompt and you need to make a new memory, you don't have a choice. All of your memories are filled up and you need to move on. That's when you have to use the mechanic to forget one. Now, in lieu of forgetting it, you could actually write it down in a journal. It's kind of like something your character can come back to. They don't actually remember it happening, so there's not that emotional connection to it anymore.
Right.
But they can hold on to it that way. Otherwise, things and people, places in a lost memory, they could come up again in a whole slew of different ways, but it's up to you to kind of work that into your story. So if you especially if you encounter another character, like another immortal, but you forget something about that immortal, and you come to a prompt again where you encounter an immortal, that could, you as a writer could make that
the
immortal you already encountered.
I got you. Know? Yeah, that's really cool. So it's just kind of more like an open-ended mechanic for you to use, basically,
yeah,
for the story, which is what's so cool about games like this. That's interesting, that whole writing it down, though. There's a Doctor Who character from Peter Capaldi's season where she's like a Viking woman and he saves her, but in saving her, like saves her from death, but in saving her, it makes her immortal. And her whole mechanic is she can't die, but like her brain can only store so many thoughts. So she has to every like year write down everything that happens to her. So she just has these huge libraries of her thoughts so that she can remember everything that she ever like went through. She has to read them, which,
yeah,
that just reminds me of that. I think that's such a cool idea. I also love the idea of a vampire, like a hunter coming after him and being like, hold on, let me get this journal down. Oh, you're this dick I met in 1862. I killed his wife. I see now. Sorry, I don't remember you. You weren't important enough to me. Like, I think that's hysterical. That's so vampiric in its
arrogance. Oh, yeah, totally.
Totally. It fits. That's not my vampire voice, by the way, everybody.
That's totally my vampire voice. That's the type of vampire I end up playing.
Ah, yes! I don't have a vampire voice yet. My character in World of Darkness is a mage, so I do not have... I haven't played a vampire. I'm doing a vampire as my backup, because who knows? I also decided to play a character who's really old and his wife's already dead. So I'm like, so this guy's gonna die. This guy's like the Gran Torino of World of Darkness characters. Like, nobody's looking at him like, oh, he's going to go for the long haul. He's, like, 52. Like, I'm like, this guy was dead the minute I made him. It's going to be an awesome death that everybody remembers, and that's going to be it. Clint Eastwood will direct a movie about it now.
Oh,
I finish things, kid. That's what I do. That's what it is. So I just talk with my voice, but slightly gruffer for him. So... yeah, I don't know. This is really cool. I think this is really cool. I think you could almost use this as a resource to make a backstory for your vampire in World of Darkness, it sounds like. Like, it just has, like, really cool... It also sounds like it's really versatile on the prompts. Like, it's just got a lot of prompts to really, like, throw at you, which I love shit like that. Absolutely love shit like that. If I can play it at least four times and not get the same thing through it, it makes me a very happy man.
Oh, 100%. You could play this 1,000 different ways. There's no doubt about it. You have a huge list of prompts, and then they give you the book that I bought, then they give you a list of alternative prompts, which are little bit looser. So you doubles your number of prompts that you could potentially use. The looser prompts are a little bit harder. You have to work a little bit more, but it's still there, and they're still awesome.
Right.
And then it gives you a bonus game, 1,000 Years of Flower.
What? What?
Yeah, and you're an immortal flower. And so basically, it's like your time spent in like a forest and your observations around you and the like.
That sounds really interesting, as crazy as that is. I don't know if it's just my age talking, but that sounds amazing.
I know, that's the
thing next time I'm gonna play. I would pretend to be a flower for 4 hours, man. Don't bother me.
I think they do actually recommend that you do that on the more of the quick play style than the...
I'm over here being a tiger lily. Just get the fuck out of my face.
Exactly. So a couple of things, though, that I really want to get across, and these are for people that have already played this, as well as people walking into it. One thing they have mentioned, and I haven't mentioned yet, is the mark. So your vampire also needs to have some kind of mark indicating that they are, in fact, a vampire. Mm. This is something they have to keep secret. This is something that some prompts will refer to because your mark was discovered by a mortal or something like that.
Gotcha.
They have listed these marks they've given you suggestions for some marks, like oozing wound that never truly heals because it's locked in time, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Oh, so it's not necessarily like a tattoo. It's like an effect almost.
Yes. Something about supernatural aspect of you. And the reason why I love this so much, and this really got my excitement going about this game, was that I love mythology. I grew up in a house full of mythology, and there is vampires today are fiction, but they're also a mythology from another culture going back, you know, to ancient times.
Mm-hmm.
And these ancient myths in some ways were kind of like almost urban legends to a certain degree, is that, you know, certain towns would have a different vampire lore than the town next to them. It wasn't all Bram Stoker and blood and all of this stuff. Some vampires were almost more like ghosts. Some were almost more like demons. And there's all these different aspects of how to be a vampire, depending on the myth that you were reading.
Okay.
And these marks, the way that they've described them and the way the suggested prompts that you could use fit into that into that sort of mythos, the various types of myths that were coming up of vampires way back in the day. Like one of them was like you have a dark halo around your head, so perhaps you need to wear a hat to hide it.
Is one of them you don't show up in mirrors?
That wasn't one of the ones listed, but it definitely could be.
Yeah, I definitely thought that would be one of the ones.
They actually got pretty macabre with some of it, and I think they must have pulled this out of some of the old histories and myths, because like one of them was literally like, you have a hollow stomach filled with rats.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, good and that's God. Straight out of like, that's got it, that sounds so East European, dark, you know, Baba Yaga mythology, you know what I'm saying?
And just on a side note, what kind of, like, if that's what vampirism is, I'll take mortality. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You get to live forever. Oh, yeah? Cool. You have to have a nest of rats in your stomach. Oh, you know what? I'll pass. No, I'm good. I'm going to be over here slowly dying then. I'll talk to you later.
But, I mean, like, you know, if you think about it, though, if those are your prompts, you could go really, like, macabre, or you could just come up with whatever you want, you know?
Yeah.
This is a more of a mythical monster than it is a Bram Stoker creation.
Yeah. I think it sounds really cool and really versatile and really made to make a lot of different stories. I know we don't usually talk about this on this show with good reason, but for some reason I'm very curious about this one. How much does this game cost?
It depends on how you get it. I got it a digital format, and I think that was about $24.
Okay,
which is,
I mean, it's 128 pages, and you gotta it's expensive for a journaling game, but it sounds like a very big and in-depth journaling game, so I wouldn't.
It is, and they put so much energy into this thing. Like I said, the even just how it looks like a scrapbook made by a vampire losing his mind over the years. it's pretty crazy. You get like bonus prompts, a bonus game. There's a whole section where the writer has given you different essays about how he created the game. A Q&A interview he did with, you know, a publication company after he created all
he
this
really
kind
tried
of
to give you the
content.
Money's worth. I just,
oh yeah,
and usually it's tricky, especially since I'm in that space at this particular moment. You know, I'm relatively new to it. We only have two games. We have a third one coming soon, but like it's tricky. It's like, because number one, as we've all seen in the last 2 years, you can't copyright a system. There's no way to do it. It's a mathematical equation. You can't copyright a mathematical equation. I don't even think you can patent it. So, like, I think that it's tough, right? Because one half of you is like, well, I put a lot of work in this and I want to make some money off of it. But the other side of things is, okay, but they don't have to pay for it. You can't sue them for having it. You know what I mean? So it's really it's really a tricky space to be in, the money space. And like our first game from Axiom, I feel kind of failed on the price and the availability of it. Whereas the second game kind of was a success, but didn't make enough money to put a dent in things. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, well, we've sold plenty of copies of this, but it didn't really make us a ton of money. So we have to find that balance somewhere.
Right.
You know? And it's very tricky to do, especially considering, you know, most games just give their shit out for free nowadays, too. Like, a lot of them do. Like, you look at, like, I think Fate Core, you could just get Fate Core. You could just go online, here's Fate Core. You know, there's tons of special rules that you could pay for by getting it, but there's just a flat system. I think one of them, like Apocalypse or Monster of the Week or something like that, also does that. And then you've got others that it's like, if you want to see the system, you got to pay for it. Obviously, that's D&D and some of the others where it's like, you got to pay for it. But at the same time, like, you rip a PDF, put it online, nobody's going to come after you for it. So it's tricky. It's real tricky to find a good price range there. So it's harder because, like, in video game land, I can very easily be like, that's not a fair price. This is a fair price for the thing that you're offering. But TTRPGs is so much harder. It's so much harder to, like, gauge what it is and what it's worth, and it's so much harder to find that worth. And so if they think it's worth $24 and the people are paying $24 for it, then more power to them. I'm not going to knock it. I just was curious as to how much they were putting it for, just because journaling games usually are cheaper in smaller experiences.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, and it's a really good point to make, because like you said, one, journaling games are normally cheaper and smaller. But also, you can also tell with some journaling games that they're, you can tell that they are made a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Not saying that they're poor quality necessarily.
Don't pick up the pitchforks, everybody.
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, like, they maybe didn't have the money to really pay for a bunch of artists, or the time to really, or the skill set to do certain aspects of the layout themselves. So they had to pay somebody else, which means budget gets retracted, and you can tell that there's certain limitations that they had in creating the game. Not that it's, the system's not as good, but maybe they're just getting started out. There are some roadblocks ahead, and they may come up with once they make a little bit more money, a deluxe edition or something. Right. But for right now, it doesn't necessarily have all of the money invested into it that they want to get back out of it.
Right, right. And I completely agree with that. And that is coming from a person who has released a journaling game that only cost $4. We put very little... We have one AI-generated picture as the cover because we couldn't even pay an artist for that one, and everything else is just text. So, it is. I know a relatively cheap one. He's my brother-in-law, and he's pretty good. He's done all of our artwork so far. And I usually pay him a fair wage, which I think is like $50 a picture. But even $50 a picture is hard when you don't have an audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when you're not making a ton of money, that's a huge chunk. Honestly, when me and Mark started doing this, we wanted to make card games. And immediately the roadblock, like, I have 3 card games fully fleshed out. I've listed all the cards. We could, you know what I mean? You could play the game from start to scratch. You need pictures for a card game. You need pictures for a card game. And pictures, like, the idea of contracting somebody to do 42 pictures, like, you would never recoup that in sales, you know? So, like,
it's real hard. Tricky.
Yeah, it's real hard. The art is a killer. And so, like, that's one hurdle that we're trying to overcome, because I only have one picture. We're going to... Our next game, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be a full play system from the ground up called Single Mod. We've got one picture we're working on for the front. And then inside it's just going to be text, and it's going to be around 30 to 40 pages. It's going to be a nice, easy-to-mod system for people out there who want to make their own worlds and stuff, and we're going to sell it on itch for $6. But, like, that kind of thing is, like, it's still, it's just one picture. I know that I'd sell more and get more attention if I had a book full of art. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I can't afford a book full of art. And, like, that's a whole nother side note is... Philbilly is a great artist. I love him. And $50 more than worth it for a picture. But even if he said, I'll do all your art for your book, he doesn't have the time. He works a full-time job. And he's a father of two. So, like, when does he have time to make 40 pictures? Which means I need to find more than one artist. If I need to find more than one artist, I need to pay each one of these artists something, you know? And it's like...
Oh, yeah.
At that point, you don't have any money to make the book, you know? So it's a tricky game. The art is a tricky game. So if he got good art and he put a lot of work into this, I think it's worth the $24. I mean, honestly, I'll get my nitpick out now. I won't rush to buy a $24 journaling game. I think that, like, that might be my mistake, though. You know what I mean? Like, that might be me missing out, but... For me,
I mean,
it's got to be what you find worth, right? And like for me, I've got so much stuff going on. I need a quicker, easier experience, and I need it to be relatively cheap. So $24 is a little bit too much for me to turn my head to. Whereas you look at like Spring Villager, Is Spring Leaf Villager or Spring Villager?
Spring Villager.
Spring Villager, right?
Spring Villager.
Yeah. You look at Spring Villager. It's a nice, simple 30-page game. You could get it for free. Pay $5, though, people. It's worth it. $5, I got it, and I've got hours of fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas this, I am sure, is awesome and fun. It's just $24 is going to cost me many different other things that I've got a budget for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand that. Everybody has their own, like, price point. And to be honest with you, 24 is a little bit dicey for me, too. Mostly, like, one of the big reasons is I buy a lot of games.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I go through. I love reading these things. And when I buy a $24 game, I'm looking at, like, how many other games could I buy with that $24?
Yeah.
Budgeting, you know?
And AAA TTRPGs are fucking expensive. Like, they are ridiculously priced. It kind of blows my mind how expensive they are, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's a guy coming from video games and AAA video game experience, which is just a monetary nightmare of Cthulhu-level, Eldritch God-level. And I look at the prices of, like you look at D&D. Right? $60 for the player's handbook. You can't even play just with that. Then you need another $60 for the GM guide, right? So now you're at $120. And then you probably need the monster's manual, really.
Has it gone up that much?
I mean, the last time I looked, that's what it was. I could be mistaken, it could be different now. But like $60, that's $180 to play that game.
Yeah, that's
crazy. And you
crazy.
Need friends. You need friends to do it. So, like,
yeah.
I don't think I could. I used to have this friend. I don't really have him anymore, but I used to have this friend. He would tell me. He would buy, like, 3 or 4 TTRPGs a week. And no shade thrown towards him. He doesn't have that many friends. He doesn't have a friend. Like, where are you playing this, man? Why are you spending this money? Like, you're out of your fucking gourd if you're spending that much for that, you know? When you're going to a group, you know?
Right, yeah.
Even if you didn't work, you could have, what, maximum 5 groups in a week? Realistically?
Yeah.
You know? Like, what are you doing?
That's one of the other hard parts about the industry and the game is, like, I'd love to play more of these games. I do just enjoy reading them. I want to play them, but, I mean, I already am in several games.
Yeah, I'm
not starting another one. Can't do it right now.
Well, that's
maybe
what's
when
awesome.
One game ends.
Yeah, that's what's awesome about our partnership is both of us have been given the opportunity to play way more games than we would have been able to before, I feel like. Like,
yes.
With Astral Drive, TMNT, our last T-Shop playthrough, like, we've really gotten a chance to, like, play in more groups than we normally would have, because I had one group, it was bi-weekly, and that was it, you know? So, like,
right, yeah.
I'm now I'm in, like, 3 groups, you know? I'm in 3 games, which is awesome. Like, when can I ever say that I have that many? And I definitely want to do more, but I'm in the same boat. I mean that's another thing as a seller, you know, how do you take people away from their ecosystem? That's one of the things I hate the most about D&D. I think if D&D existed and it just existed on its system, I'm sure it would have people who like it. I am not one of them, but I'm sure it would. I think that D&D has this, like, clout where, like, people get into it, and then it's their Bible. Like, as far as TTRPGs are concerned, for the entirety of the life. And you can't...
It kind of reminds me of that Cult of Mac, when Macs were, like, brand new. And, like, Mac people were like, no, you have to have
a Mac. You have to have this. If you don't have it, you're stupid. Like, with D&D, it's the same way. And I feel like, how do you separate them from that? Especially since... It's not the best system, guys. It's fine. I'm not even going to say I don't like it, but I'm not going to say it's the worst system. But it's not the best. It's not the best probably for the amount of people that play it. I am sure there are plenty of people who play D&D and swear by D&D who would enjoy Fate Core or Monster of the Week way better than they would D&D, but they don't want to try it because D&D is all they ever know, and D&D has that clout that just, like,
right,
makes people go to it first, you know?
And I do like D&D. I like 5th edition. I like AD&D. But I actually have the same opinion. It's a really good system. Is it the best system? I mean, there's some problems with it here and there. There's a reason why, like, there's so much homebrew out there and there's so many supplements. At the same time, like, there's no such thing as a perfect system.
No,
it's a really fun game. I love the game. I love playing it. But there's so many other games out there that I also love to play that so many people are just so – they're never going to experience because they never give themselves an opportunity to – expand outward. D&D. And the other big...
Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
The other big issue I have with... Actually, this is like the real issue I have with Dungeons & Dragons and like how that kind of affects the TTRPG community at large is Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition is a robust game that takes work to learn. Mm-hmm. You do have to put some energy into it. There are other games that are easier to learn that are just as robust. But people are intimidated by leaving a game they already know and all of the time and investment that they put into that game to learn another system. Even if it would be better for them. And honestly, in my opinion, once you learn one system, it's so much easier to learn another system.
Especially if it's a simpler system.
You
know, one of my biggest issues with D&D... And your thought was very close to it, is it ends up coming across as, because it's so well known, as the first game that somebody picks up when they're trying to get into role-playing games. Like, when they're like, hey, I want to get into role-playing games. Well, it's D&D. D&D is the game that you know about, that you've heard about. But I'm going to say right now, and I'll stand on this and fight on this and debate on this. D&D is not the best system for a first-time player. It's not even close to the best system for a first-time player. I feel like D&D is something you work to because it is a very, very heavy stat-oriented system. It would be way easier to get somebody into the core logic of what role-playing games is with something like Fate Core or... you know, something that's a little bit more rules light, or even a journaling game. I would never, if somebody came to me and said, I want to play role-playing games for this first time, I would never send them to D&D. And of course, I don't love D&D, but it doesn't mean that, like, I wouldn't recommend it eventually, but it would never be the first game out to date. It is not a tutorial game. It's
right.
It's a lot of rules. And just like you said, it takes a lot to learn. And I think that, like, that's my biggest problem with it, is it comes across as, like, the everyman's game, and it is not the everyman's game. I can think of, like, 6 everyman's games in my head that are slightly better than D&D, but they're just not as known.
You know, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't really considered it from that specific perspective before. But you're right. The fact that it's so well-known does kind of inhibit people from learning a better starter game. That's 100%. 100% agree with you on that one. Because, yeah, there are plenty of starter games out there that are... I mean, like, honestly...
Hero Kids. We did it, 2 weeks ago? Hero Kids.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Super easy, super fast. Perfect. You play that in an afternoon, an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter who you're playing, that would be good. Mm-hmm. The role-playing game that we did last week...
Four Against Darkness. Yeah. I think that would be better too.
There's a co-op version of it. It's super simple. Good introduction. Just start with that.
And that's like a tutorial version of D&D. You know what I mean? You play that. Yeah. Okay, now you're maybe ready for the D&D. I think that, like, yeah, there's a lot of games out there that just represent role-playing a little bit better, but D&D has just such an amount of clout that it brings anybody to it before they go looking. Like, what's weird about the TTRPG space is the deep cuts shouldn't be the deep cuts. They should be the ones that, like, everybody plays. And the deep cuts should be games like World of Darkness, like Dungeons & Dragons. Like, the much more complicated, harder-to-learn systems should be the deep cuts. Like, those should be the, oh, let's advance to this. Look at all these numbers. they shouldn't be the starters. And that's something that's always... I think one of my big hatreds of D&D comes from that, is that D&D is like... It's just lauded as the role-playing game. If you are going to play role-playing games, you play D&D. No. There's way better things that are going to represent role-playing games to you. The other thing that D&D does that I hate, and I think that D&D, again, we're talking way too much about D&D.
I know, right? But this is the digression.
The other thing that D&D does that I hate is it game... Well, I don't hate it, but... It gamifies like video gamifies TTRPGs. There are tons of that, especially nowadays. They've really like leaned into that with the cantrips and the abilities. Like everybody's a fucking wizard because everybody has these abilities. That's very video gamey. And the problem with that is if you're not a good role player to start with, it's going to hinder your role playing in the moment. Because you're making these builds to, like, do this without thinking to yourself, why is my character doing this? Why does my character have this? Why is my character accomplishing this? I think a lot of D&D sessions, especially actual plays, which I think we've talked about this actually on this show before, but especially actual plays, it's one of the reasons I avoid D&D actual plays. Because too often, I'll see them, like, they'll be doing okay role-playing, and then the minute any sort of conflict starts... It turns into a video game scene just with dice. And, like, I'm like, your character doesn't make sense anymore. And, like, that's the thing that really bugs me, is it almost takes people out of that role-playing headspace. Whereas when you have a game that is much more kind of loose, you allow people to get more creative and get into the characters more than... throwing these numbers and abilities at them, which are really cool if you know what you're doing on the role-playing front. But if you don't know what you're doing on the role-playing front, you're going to end up falling in this kind of like, I'm just trying to beat the level sort of like serotonin release, you know?
We're going to have to do a whole session on just Dungeons & Dragons at some point where we just talk about it. We're not going to be able to avoid it anymore.
At some point, we're going to have to go into it. I think we do have to have the D&D out. I think we do. It'll be a nice big episode for us.
It would be, yeah. but maybe getting back to...
Yeah, we're almost at the end of the show. Do you have any more like cons for it? Because I do think we went through the game pretty well before we went on our tangent. But is there any like more nitpicks that we would talk about? Mine was kind of the price.
Yeah, nitpicks. There's maybe a couple of things here and there that... So, as much as I like the layout and the... illustrations and everything, there are certain aspects of it that is a little hard on the eyes. That's going to be my nitpick. It's not the majority of the book. It's more of the examples that they give. They have like one in there where it literally looks like he had maybe cut segments out of various newspaper headlines to give you examples of what writing a prompt would look like. Okay. It's really cool. It's very stylistic. But I'm nitpicking. It's a little hard for me to read it sometimes. The font's all over the place, and I can't follow it very easy.
Okay.
So that's my maybe a little bit of a nitpick.
Maybe a little bit better organization, maybe.
Organization and making sure that all of the content is easy to read, especially the important stuff. Right. Most of the important stuff is easy to read, but it's a nitpick part of our segment, so...
Yeah.
Nitpicky. Like, there's some stuff that was like I had to spend a little bit too much time on because it was hurting my eyeballs to look at.
Yeah. There's definitely been games where I'm like looking at it like I don't understand what they're trying to tell me to do here. Especially with TMNT. We've talked about that a lot in TMNT. There's still moments in TMNT where I'm like, this rule does not make sense in any way, shape, or form, so we're just going to have to do our own thing. They were obviously trying to convey something with this that they did not accomplish, so I'm just going to do this with it and see what happens. All right, man. Well, I don't know. I think we covered it, dude. What do you think?
I think so, too. Yeah. Walking away from this game, it's one that I definitely highly recommend. It is $24 on Drive-Thru. It is worth it. it is worth it to me. You have to decide, like we were saying, if it's worth it to you. But if role playing games,
I wasn't trying to say don't buy it, everybody.
No, I know. But it is one of those things, like, you know, you have to decide if you're not into vampires whatsoever.
Stay away.
Maybe $24 isn't exactly for you, you know, like, but if it's even like a little bit of a thing, the heavy emphasis isn't going to be on like a Bram Stoker or, you know, even worse, the Twilight sort of sparkly vampire stuff whatsoever. This is more old world grit. And if that sounds, interesting to you, a dark, almost grim fairy tale like role-playing game, journaling game, this is definitely up your alley. I highly recommend it for anybody out there listening that would find something like that interesting.
Cool. Well, awesome. Next week I am not going to choose a game because we are trying to work something out to have a special episode next week, if I recall, Wizards. So I'm going to back away from the idea of picking a game next week. But if something happens, I'm sure we'll do something, right?
Yeah, we'll have just something
be a
we can pull together.
Conversation or something, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, did you want to advertise it? We don't have anything deadlock confirmed, right?
We don't have it deadlock confirmed. Right. We're trying to get our very first interview together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much more until the name has committed. But I've been talking with this person, and I think that it'd be a really good another aspect to add to our show that with somebody who really knows a lot about their specific niche within the TTRPG world.
Yeah. I think it'll be really cool. We'll see if it happens. If it doesn't, we'll just talk about random RPG shit.
We got so many games in the back pocket, we could just...
I think the next time we don't have something to do, we should just do D&D and get it over with. So, like...
That's not a bad idea.
If they can't do it, let's just get into it on D&D. We both know enough to say what we need to say, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, then, when you guys are watching this, it's going to be, I believe, on a Friday, this coming Friday. So there we have a bunch of stuff coming up ahead. Zach, do you have anything you'd want to plug?
Please check out our last episode of TMNT and Other Strangeness, The Stump Gang. It is absolutely a good-natured, fun romp of an RPG. I love it so much. I love our Astral Drive too. Do not get me wrong. Astral Drive is a very different feel though. It's got political intrigue. It's got everybody who's who. It's like a pressure cooker. Like that game is almost like an ulcer waiting to happen for me. Whereas the TMNT game that we have, it's once a month. It's myself, Phil Billy, and Wiz, and we just have so much fun with it. So much fun with it. I would also like to urge people to check out Astral Drive. That's every other Wednesday, with this last Wednesday being... It's always the Wednesday that this one comes out, that this show comes out, actually.
Right
now, we're on the same schedule as it. So if this is out, we had an episode this Wednesday or Thursday. I think we're doing it this Thursday because of scheduling, but whatever. Which is a lot of fun. We actually play it with the system that's coming out from my game company soon, almost like a live play test. But at the same time, it is a completely unique world that we're playing in, and that's a lot of fun too. So that's the TTRPG stuff coming from my channel, other than this show, which I would appreciate you checking any of those things out personally.
Yeah, and on that note, my plug for the day would be basically, you know, we have all of those things, those amazing shows playing, and they're all on here on YouTube, but they're also on the Wizard's Respite, cataloging them. I'm putting them all together so you can look at them and run through them. They are so much fun. The TMNG's Other Strangenesses, I play a armadillo mutant. That thinks he's John Wayne. It's a lot of fun. Phil plays a conspiracy nut alligator mutant.
An alligator that thinks he's Alex Jones.
Yeah, it's such an irreverent game to start with, and then we're playing it fun, irreverent.
Yes.
It's just a fun game to play, and I think everybody would really just enjoy a nice, relaxing, fun, something fun.
Yeah, everything else I listen to, even when it's fun, there's still something going on that's like, oh God, it's so heavy. You know what I mean? Whereas with this one, there's nothing like, I mean, there's definitely some heavy themes here and there because they're protecting kids who got abused. But like, but overall, it's never really super heavy. It's just like, goes down easy, man. This is the cinnamon roll of shows. Like, it's just a nice thing to listen to in the morning. It's only ever 2 hours. So it's nice and easy. You don't have to sit there for a 4 hour chunk. It's just, the only thing I miss is I wish I had some music for it. I just wish I had some music for it. Honestly, one of them I wish I had some music for. But
One thing at a time, right?
Yes. One thing at a time. So, oh, and yeah, please do check it out. If you come live, by all means, come to Old Man Gaming because you can actually communicate with us while we're doing it. But if you're watching it and it's already happened, just go over to Wizard's Respite and check it out there so we both get the views. And he keeps good records of everything. So
okay, I think that's it for tonight. Well, thank you for everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time. We'll catch you in one of our other mini shows.